Welcome back once again to the Parish of the Patriots. It is the 347th installment. Time continues to fly by quickly. I'm recording this on Saturday. I'm back on my normal recording schedule. I usually record the show over the weekend, normally on Saturdays. And it is November now. So some big happening happens. It's between Saturday and Tuesday when this airs, and I'm not talking about it. That's why I recorded the show on Saturday. We are into the month of November. We've got some exciting stuff coming in November for Radio Albion. I hope you'll look forward to it. I know things have been kind of stale, kind of stagnant. We do the best we can, but it is what it is. But we got some exciting stuff coming for November. It's good. November's going to be an exciting month for Radio Albion, those of us here, and for you, the audience. So I hope you'll look forward to it. Stay tuned. Keep coming back. We got some great stuff coming later this month. So I'm excited for it. I'm probably more excited than anybody. I ain't going to lie. And y'all should be too. It's going to be great. You're going to see some cool stuff happening with Radio Albion. Of course, this is the Parish of the Patriots program today. And although I know most of you are return members of the congregation, if you are new, this first time tuning in, I hope you'll stick for the whole thing. We do have a Christian-specific segment to roughly, very roughly sometimes, halfway mark of the show. I hope you'll give it a chance. It is designed for people who are already believers, kind of well along in the faith. So new believers or skeptics, they may not get much out of it, but it's there. I do put it separate, so you have that option. But I hope you'll at least give it a chance. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes, and we got one way only, and that is a snail mail. You go to the page here for Parish of the Patriots. Look at the description for the show. You got the player there. We got snail mail address. You can disregard the crypto addresses. Those are not mine. That's left over from Sven. And I don't do any of that. I've got envelopes. I'm old. You know, like people be like, do you take Zelle? No, I don't take Zelle. I'm old. I do envelopes in the mail. I'm 100% on this stuff. I'm analog. So, and you can't say, well, I don't know how to do that, because everybody knows how to address an envelope, or if you don't, you should. Kids these days don't even know how to address an envelope. Don't be coming at me going, I don't know how to address it. You just look. You can find a template. It's not hard. You put a stamp on it. And for all its shortcomings, the post office has been I've had a relatively steady experience with the post office. And hey, as a part of that, we do the listener supporter mailbag. It's kind of my version of super chats. And so, yes, this is the part where we go into the listener supporter mailbag, but that we don't have one again this week. So we can just keep on trucking. We don't have to slow down. I was reading an interesting article. Now there's a lot of talk right now because Trump is inching closer to attacking Venezuela, because of course, why the hell wouldn't we be? It's all so tiresome. You know, it's like, as the system continues to flail about, it's becoming more and more erratic, you know, when it's like the only answer is to attack some other country, you know, particularly, you know, especially what the U.S. specializes in, which is countries that can't fight back. That's, you know, they try it out, and if the countries can fight back, then that's a problem, because they don't have a really good track record when the countries can fight back. And sometimes, you know, it looks like it's a country that can't fight back, only they can. And this poses a problem, because they have this narrative they have to keep selling to the population about, you know, the mighty, the most powerful military. I still see people memeing this on the internet. It's becoming more and more of a forced meme, you know. The most powerful military that's ever existed on the face of the planet. I see this spammed by idiots or shills and or shills, you know, the most powerful military that's ever existed on the face of the planet. And I always wonder, what are they basing this on? And at the end of the day, the answer is how much money the U.S. spends on the military, on the quote-unquote defense budget. It's the most expensive. In other words, it's the most expensive military. But to say it's the most powerful military, that's a little, that's kind of a stretch. Now, of course, when you understand one of the primary purposes of the U.S. military, the defense, quote-unquote defense department, now it's the War Department, I guess. They're being a little more upfront, a little more honesty. We're finally getting a little transparency. Is not to win wars, it's to generate profits. And that's the ultimate goal. When I see this, you know, Trump demands that Europe carry their share of the burden. They've got to up their defense spending. But you see, since they're in NATO, that means they have to buy U.S. weapons. It's generating profit. Of course, they go along with the Europeans being insane and going on about Russia's going to invade at any minute. That's why they put the Baltics, the make-believe Baltic countries, the make-believe countries like Lithuania, Estonia, they put them on the front because they're like the most insane. You know, evil Russia, they're going to invade at any minute. And they're generating billions and billions. When they get them to increase their defense spending, that means they increase their purchase of U.S. weapons, orders for U.S. weapons. Helps that stock price. But that's the primary goal. It's not to win wars. On paper, think of it this way. On paper, you know, the U.S. should have just steamrolled over Vietnam. That could have been a joke. That should have been a joke. But it didn't turn out so well. But it did in the sense that it generated a lot of profit. For the defense industry. You naturally hear a lot of people talking about World War III. They're going to be World War III. U.S. is going to get into World War III with China. World War III with Russia. And, you know, anything's possible because, you know, events outside. These people way overestimate their ability to control everything, you know, to manipulate. They think they're so smart and they're so clever. That nothing would get out of hand. I don't have that much confidence. But the idea that they're trying to start, you know, they're trying to start World War III. They're gonna have a big war with Russia. And I don't believe that. And let me tell you why. Because here's the problem. Let's just say hypothetically, because China is the problem. Let's say the U.S. did. Let's say the U.S. just said, heck with it. And kicked off a direct confrontation, a huge battle, you know, huge war with China. Go over to the South China Sea. We're going to rename it the Asian American Sea or something. And they get into this big conflict, a major conflict with China. Here's the problem with that. We all know, you know, I know, pretty much anybody now knows that it doesn't matter how deep into this conflict the U.S. is in. The U.S. has had ships sunk and they're launching missiles towards, they haven't gone nuclear yet, but they're launching missiles at China. China's launching missiles back at U.S. ships. And it is a direct confrontation and it is boy, some scary stuff and is neck deep in this conflict. Now, there's the problem with that. Again, you know, I know, everybody knows, including these politicians. In the middle of this conflict, Israel gets into trouble. What's going to happen? The U.S. is going to throw everything down and go hauling ass to the Middle East as fast as they can because they got to rescue Israel. There's the problem. That's why they're not going to intentionally. I'm not saying it can't happen because they're stupid and things get out of your control and they don't have as much control as they like to imagine they do. But we all know they can't commit to a major fight. Now, they can bomb Venezuela. That's a nothing burger. You know, they can. That's they did this whole proxy war with the Ukraine, generating profits for the military industrial complex. And that hasn't really turned out so well. But that didn't, you know, like I say, that hasn't gone so well. But they haven't gone all in, like on a direct confrontation. It's like, oh, NATO's going to go into Ukraine. No, they're not. Because, again, the U.S. can't commit to this. So they're going to turn around and maybe attack Venezuela. That looks like an easier target so we can chalk up a win. Let's try to chalk up a win for the public. Even though nobody with a thinking brain gives a shit about Venezuela, except for these people in Washington. But they can't. They're not going to intentionally get into a major conflict with a peer power, A, because they can't win. But, you know, and they may not even realize that. You look at all these politicians and they're all boomers, and they're still like Trump himself is stuck in this boomer fantasy land of how everyone on the face of the planet is so terrified of America. And so when he makes these ultimatums, and a lot of times these countries just look at him and tell him to piss off, he doesn't know how to handle it. But they're not. They're not going to commit to a major conflict, intentionally at least, because everybody in the room knows that the minute Israel gets into trouble, they will have to flee. You're going to see a full running away from that conflict because they have to go to the Middle East to protect Israel, because that's who owns our government. That's we're the client's sake. There's a reality. You know, the U.S. government is a client state to Israel. You can sit there and say why that is, how that is, why it shouldn't be. None of that matters. The reality of what we're looking at is the U.S. government serves as a client state to Israel. I still read articles regularly that try to twist it. They try to get that upside down and say, no, Israel is just the U.S. empire's outpost in the Middle. Look, you either have no ability, somebody writes that, either does not have any ability to look at things for what they are. They're lacking in information, maybe. Maybe they're just afraid that they might step on an anti-Semitic landmine. I don't know the reasoning. But if you look at things at the whole and the way the dynamics play out, no. The U.S. government is the client state to Israel. So you're not going to get some big, in-depth, multi-year commitment to a major conflict. Because again, the minute Israel gets into trouble, they're going to have to run away. They're going to have to flee that conflict to go rescue Israel. Because when the orders come down, you know, from the ones running everything, you know, Netanyahu calls them up and says, I need your carriers back here. We're fixing to have another show up. That's what they're going to do. They're not going to say, well, we're in the middle of a conflict with China. You're on your own, Netanyahu. They're not going to. Does anybody realistically think that they would tell Israel, you're going to have to sink or swim? Good luck. It's not going to happen. I started to say, and then I got off on this. I was reading a story out the other day about the woman that was, you know, several years back. She was the true elected leader of Belarus. Because, see, they have the same thing. You see the same pattern. They have this woman that's like the true elected leader. She's the true future president of Venezuela. They always manufacture these people. And I was reading the story about this woman, and I remember from several years ago, they had the election. Of course, like 98% of the people voted for Lukashenko in Belarus. They had international observers. Everybody said things were on the up and up. And yet the U.S., they come out and say, oh, no, this obscure woman that no one gives a shit about, she's the true leader. And then she went to Lithuania, one of the make-believe Baltic countries. Because if you were sure that the Russians are going to attack any minute, that's where you would go, to this little make-believe country right there close that would be the first to be steamrolled over in that situation. That's where you would go. You wouldn't go as far away. And she set up a government in exile. And I was reading an interesting article the other day about how that whole thing has collapsed, because, of course, they were just taking money, embezzling it, and, you know, the stuff they had a plan to issue a true Belarus passport by this government in exile that nobody voted for. And there was a plan to have all the European nations, you know, in the U.S. would recognize this passport issued by the government in Lithuania in exile. And, of course, the whole plan was stupid. You look at it, you just skim over the plan and go, well, this, you know, anybody with any thinking brain would look and go, this is stupid. What do you expect, people from Belarus to come get your fake passport? But nevertheless, that was the big plan. A lot of money got spent, and this woman and some of her cronies pocketed the money. Nothing ever became of it. And now she's basically being tossed under the bus. In Venezuela, you have a similar situation. Several years ago, they did this other guy in Venezuela. You know, I don't remember his name off the top of my head because I don't really care, because it doesn't matter. You know, the people they set up as, you know, they had an election. Once again, the guy the U.S. didn't want won overwhelmingly. And they had this nobody that didn't even run. And they said, he's the true president. I mean, he didn't even run. And he was like, no, he's the true president of Venezuela. And I was thinking about how the democracy systems are becoming more and more of a failure. And as they become more and more of a failure, and it becomes more and more obvious, the opposition candidates they put out there are becoming more and more ridiculous. You know? The people, for instance, in Belarus, they like Lukashenko. I mean, sure, not everybody. But I mean, obviously, the guy's not clinging to power because he's scaring everybody. I mean, why would you vote against if you were in Belarus? And again, I'm not one of these people that, you know, creates this fantasy great person that's 100%. Look, there ain't nobody ever going to be 100% great, you know, as far as that goes. But if you were in Belarus, why would you vote against Lukashenko? Let's say I'm voting against Lukashenko. I hate the fact that I have healthcare coverage here. Like, I won't bankrupt myself if I get sick. Heck with that. And then you always, these candidates, these ridiculous opposition people that they present and claim, these are the true people. This is who everybody in the country is scrambling and want. You know, whether it's this woman in Belarus, whether it's this latest entity they're bringing out for Venezuela. And you look into what they're for, and it's always the same thing. It's like, well, for starters, this thing where all the citizens have their health care coverage, we need to get rid of that. What a horrible thing. We need IMF loans and austerity. We need to cut the health care for the people, and we need to let these international corporations come in and take over everything. That's what the people want. And they try to tell everybody that's what the people want. That's why they have to create these cartoonish narratives, you know. Maduro is so evil. This whole narrative now, they created this new one that, you know, the evil communist thing wasn't really working. So now they're doing, he's a narco-terrorist. They're running a narco-terrorism outfit. This is, by the way, this is a recycled thing. You know, they did the same thing back in, what was it, the 80s, I believe, you know, with Panama, you know, with the guy down there. Noriega. I knew it'd come to my mind here in a minute. And, you know, he's the reason we're being flooded for drugs. Well, they eventually toppled Noriega. And here we are today. The drugs didn't go away. Gee, it's almost like that was just a made-up excuse. Who would have thunk it? No way. And you still have idiots that are out there cheering this shit. And it's like, I thought when they got rid of Noriega way, you know, decades ago, that was going to fix the drug problem. You telling me that was a lie? It was obviously a lie. You're telling me maybe it has nothing to do with quote-unquote narco. These marketing terms that they come up with. We're marketing our opposition in Venezuela now. Not as evil communists, because that one's getting pretty stale. Because people say, well, even if they are, how does that affect us? Why do I give a shit? So we've gone to marketing again, and we've done some research, and the team here has come up with a new branding for our enemies, for our opposition. They are narco-terrorists. You see, we got narco. We don't want the drugs. And they're terrorists. You see, they're both of the bad things. You see, we had the drug people were bad, and then we had the terrorism was bad, and now we have combined the two. Whether it makes sense or not. It's kind of like when they come out with that EV Hummer, you know. You've got a giant tank of a vehicle that nobody wants, and you've got these electric vehicles that nobody wants. The answer is, hey, let's combine the two things nobody wants, and they'll double want it then, because of course they will. Narco-terrorists. They're narco-terrorists. They're not just terrorists. They're terrorists using drugs. They're forcing people in the U.S. to shoot up with fentanyl. We need some wins. Let's get some cool smart bomb video of random boats being blown up. No one ever asks a question, or thinks about the logic of how much did this missile cost as opposed to how much the boat cost. They show them blowing up this speedboat out in the ocean. We have no idea who's on those boats, by the way. They just tell us those were drug running boats. Well, that boat ain't going to make it to the U.S., so where was it going? It's a dangerous time to be out skiing off the coast of Venezuela because you could be blown up for the cameras. You know, how much did the missile cost? How much did the boat cost? And of course, again, the narrative we have is, they're stopping the narco terrorists. We launched the CIA has been approved to carry out operations in Venezuela. Maduro's days are numbered because here comes America, buddy. The screaming eagle is on your doorstep, and you know what's coming. More democracy, more freedom. Enjoy the healthcare coverage while you've got it, Venezuela, because we're bringing austerity, IMF debt, and privatization. All that stuff will be taken over by the corporations, strip mined of any profit, and the rest of you can just go on and be even more poor than what you are. You think you live in a shithole now? You haven't seen nothing yet, buddy. But I absolutely love how they bring these people who are complete nobodies, and they bring them to the forefront, and suddenly they claim these are the legitimate rulers of these. And these are like literally nobodies. Literal nobodies. They bring them out and claim that they're the legitimate rulers. And no one's even heard of these people. You know, and they have to. Because a lot of times these people they want to overthrow are actually popular with the people. Imagine that. For whatever reason, they won't ever tell you why. They just claim the elections are fake. That's because that's all they got. Our elections are never fake, by the way, but their elections are, and the only reason they're fake, they're fake if and when the candidates that the U.S. government doesn't like win. When they win, it's a fake election. And then they come out with these literal nobodies and claim this is the true legitimate leader of the country, which we back, their policies all consist of what we want, making the people in those countries' lives shittier while the corporations come in and strip mine the economy. They brought the freedom and democracy. You look at all these countries they've wrecked. Libya is one of the most egregious examples of the truly egregious example of destroying a country that was doing really well, that was providing for their people. And then they claim that, oh, Gaddafi was so unpopular. He was oppressing the people. Yeah, they hated having their college paid for them. They hated having free health care. They really hated that not being in debt thing. They just couldn't wait to get rid of this guy because look how much better things are now. And the thing they don't want anybody thinking about, if this democracy system is so great, why do they have to come up with these things? Couldn't they just sell it on the merits? You see, the day I remember Reagan's speech about, you know, America is the shining beacon, you know, the shining light, the shining city on the hill, everybody in the world. And those days are gone. Now, boomers are still hung up on it. You know, they're still hung up on this past idea. They really think that that's the way people see. See, so many people in the world now have the internet. They see the videos of people passed out on the subway in New York City while giant rats crawl over and bite their face. And it doesn't really have much of a shining city on the hill vibe to it. The vibe, it's just the ambiance, the feel of it just isn't really there. I love how people be in denial, you know, even here in this country, you know. People in New York act like that's where everybody else in the country wishes they could live in New York. And they'll say things like that, you know. I live in New York, like it's a flex, you know. They'll go to the flyover country. They'll go down to a place like Mississippi and be like, oh, I'm from New York. Because they have this attitude like everybody wishes they were. Everybody wishes they could live in New York City. You couldn't pay me to go visit that shithole. No offense to any of you who do live there. You choose to live there. I don't care. I don't care if you choose to live in a mud hut in Africa somewhere. That's your choice. But for me, you couldn't pay me to go on vacation to that shithole. You say, hey, Dan, you've won an all-expense vacation to the Big Apple, New York City, buddy. And I would just be like, can I cash that in for the money? There ain't nothing there I want to see. I don't want to go experience the rats on the subway. Maybe I too could get smugged. That's part of the experience, right? Why would I want to do that? I could experience the vibrancy and diversity of New York City. You see, the whole shining light, the shining city on the hill that everybody wishes they could come to see, that ship has long sailed. Back in the day, yeah, sure. You know, you could convince people of that. And if you were, look, I'd be real. When Reagan made that statement, made that speech, you know, he was comparing, of course, to the Soviet Union. And yes, compared to the Soviet Union, America was a shining city on the hill. But this isn't the 1980s anymore. Boy, isn't it not the 1980s anymore. America is the evil empire now. I mean, that's the reality. That's the reality a lot of Americans don't want to wrap their heads around. We're the bad guy now. You know, I mean, when the Soviet Union was around, yeah, it made sense. We're the shining city on the hill compared to that. Sure. You know, I'm going to sit here and pretend like America, it was worse than the Soviet Union. No. But the Soviet Union's long been gone. I always call it that on purpose. I'm not misspeaking. For some reason, I always thought that was humorous to call it Soviet Union. I don't know why. I probably started doing that when I was like 10 or something, and I still think it's clever all these years later. But nevertheless, that's gone. And we're the evil empire now. That's a reality. It's like accepting the reality that the U.S. is client state to Israel. It's insulting. It's not a pleasant reality. It's kind of degrading, but it is what it is. You know, you just accept that reality and keep moving forward accordingly. If this democracy system was all that, then people would be scrambling for it. They wouldn't have to invent these nobodies and condemn elections that are obviously legit. You know, they don't have to try to make up some weird narrative of why people keep voting for Lukashenko in Belarus when they could have this woman that no one's ever heard of who wants to end free health care, college education, privatize everything, and make everybody poor. Who wouldn't want that? Why, she could secure you some IMF loans. Which, of course, the leadership will put in their pockets and everybody else will be on the hook for, with more austerity. If the democracy system was so great, they wouldn't have to come up with this stuff. They could just sell it for what it is, you know? You always know somebody's trying to sell you some bullshit when they have to make up this big story. You know, if you can just look at the product and go, yeah, this is cool. This is just what I want. This is just what I've been looking for. You don't have to. The salesman just has to stand there and take your money. That's all they got to do. You know, just take my money. Look at this. This is what I want. Take my money. When they're trying to sell you a steaming pile of bullshit, that's when they got to come in with a pitch. That's when they got to come in and try to convince you. That's when they need all of this marketing to convince you that this is what you need. You don't need what you've got. You need this steaming pile of dung. This is what you need. And they're having a more and more difficult time convincing people because people in these countries are going, yeah, my country may be a quasi shithole, but I'm looking at your country and I don't see that you're really any better. You know, better the devil you know than the one you don't, right? Better these guys that we have. At least they're our own guys. So they keep coming up with these more and more absurd, obviously marketed research sales pitch. They're narco terrorists. I laugh every time I read that. The narco terrorists. We're taking out the narco terrorists. And it's Maduro. He's the number one narco terrorist. Wasn't a narco terrorist 2 years ago. When did he go into the narco terrorism business? It's all so stupid, and it tells us that they can't sell the democracy system anymore as the shining light, and this is what everybody aspires. When people were in the Soviet Union, if they were allowed to come, they wouldn't allow them to come to the U.S. If you know, you couldn't just come here for a visit. Soviet Union wouldn't allow you to do that. Why? Because when people would come here and walk through the grocery store and see all of this food on the shelves, they would be like, this is a trick. There's no way. Because in the Soviet Union, it was a real shithole. You couldn't maybe line up for some bread or something. You see, then you could sell the democracy system. People come, if people could come and see it, you wouldn't have to give them a sales pitch. All you'd have to do is let them come, take a walk through any grocery store in any place in America and see all this food on the shelves. And they'd go back and be like, we live in a shithole. These people over here got food on the shelves. They walk in and buy meat, much less a loaf of bread is nothing. You sell it on the merits of itself. But you see, those days are gone. We're an end-stage democracy now, is degraded to the point they can't sell it on that anymore. They can't sell it any longer. So they have to come up with these stupid, ludicrous narratives about freedom, you know, these abstract ideas. Freedom, democracy, the will of the people. Those things are never defined. They're never defined for reason. Because if people actually start comparing what the U.S. got. And like I say, back in the Soviet Union days, people from the Soviet Union couldn't come over here to see it. That's why they didn't let them come. They could go on vacation. An average citizen in the Soviet Union could come over to America and walk through a grocery store. They're going to have problems when they get back and tell everybody, we don't know what we're missing out on. But see, those days are gone. Now the U.S. is basically the Soviet Union, and they keep trying to convince their own citizens and everybody else that this is the place. But again, the problem is a lot of people in the world have the internet now. They don't have to come to America to see it for themselves. They can go online and see what a shithole this place has become. And they don't want in on that. They see how corrupt our government is, and they're like, yeah, we don't need that. I mean, our guy may not be great, but, you know, he's not taking orders from Netanyahu. Again, the easiest way to understand this is we're the Soviet Union now. Only we're, again, all the Soviet government had to do back in the day was just not let anyone go see it for themselves, and they could tell them whatever. America's a horrible place. Those people are starving over there. Be grateful for your loaf of bread, comrade. But see, the U.S. government, the new Soviet Union, doesn't have that. The people don't have to go see it for themselves. They can go online and look. It's go, wow. People actually lay on their rotten subways that obviously are about 60 years out of date, at least, and rats crawl over them. Well, there's homeless people passed out on their sidewalks everywhere. People are literally shitting on the sidewalk. Shut up on fentanyl. Doesn't have a very shining city on the hill feel to it to me. You can't BS the citizens of these other countries and say, don't you want the freedom? Don't you want the democracy? Look what America's offering. People go online and they see what America's offered to all these other countries they've overthrown. I saw a deal the other day, said to people of Venezuela, if the U.S. starts attacking them, you know, they're not going to fight for Maduro. And maybe they won't. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know things that I do not. But what I do know is people can look around. Like if I was in Venezuela, regardless of how I felt about Maduro, I would look at what happened to Libya and where it wound up. And I would be like, well, no, we don't want that. It ain't even got to be a matter of fighting for that guy. It's a matter of you fighting to keep from becoming Libya. At the end of the day, and again, people being so devoid of reality. Let me tell you something, buddy. America could topple Venezuela tomorrow. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend like I know. I don't pretend to be an expert if I don't know. What I do know is America can bomb Venezuela. But basically, their game plan would be bomb them and hope the people overthrow Maduro. That's what they got. Or maybe find a way to sneak in a special ops team and assassinate him. Because, you know, again, U.S. government policy and Israeli government policy is one of the same. So you see the same tactics. All the criticism of how slow Russia's going at the Ukraine. Oh, they don't even know how. Well, that's because they're not fighting in the Israeli style where they just kill everybody indiscriminately. I mean, citizens are going to, or civilians are going to die in war. That happens. But they're at least taking some precautions. Hey, look at these people. Be like, oh, the Russia can't even fight a war. Look how slow it's taking them to go through Ukraine. Well, that's because they're not using the American/Israeli model where you just indiscriminately bomb everybody. What the hell? They can bomb. But if the people rally around Maduro, if, in other words, you can only do so much with air power. You can bomb buildings, you can bomb people, you can try to kill people, you can even send in a small special ops assassination teams, which are way overblown, by the way. I saw a story here a while back, and I need to wrap this up, I know, but I saw a story a while back that at one point in time when Trump last time was meeting with Kim from North Korea, they sent the Navy SEALs in to plant some listening devices so they could hear what the North Koreans were talking about, planning or whatever. And they sent them in. They went scuba diving, only they got lost. This is the crack special ops teams that the U.S. has. And they got lost. And so they had to surface. And when they surfaced, they came upon some North Korean fishermen. And so they just shot them and then scuba dived back to the ship. And that was the end. They didn't get to plant their listening devices. So when you hear that they're sending in the CIA to send in special ops, take this guy out, that isn't an automatic deal either. And worst case scenario for the U.S. is actually having to send some troops in there, because that gets real, real sketchy real fast. People already aren't rallying. There's no rally. Yes, take out Venezuela. No one voted for that shit. You know, even the red hat cult people didn't vote for that shit. And when you start having soldiers coming back in body bags for what? That is going to be a real problem. Anyway, I just think it's interesting that they can't sell the democracy system any longer on its merits. So they come up and market these non-entity people, claim they're the, you got to deny reality and claim that's who everybody really wants, because they really want to lose their free healthcare, college and benefits or whatever, and let the corporations come in. We need some austerity and IMF loans and all the rest of it. But yeah, anyway. We are the new Soviet Union. Enjoy it. Lap it up. What we are going to enjoy is getting into the Christian specific segment. We got to keep this thing rolling. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into the day's Christian specific segment at the Parish of the Patriots. Let's start off in the book of Proverbs, chapter 22, verse 3. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. This is such a very relevant warning. As the spiritual battles that engulf this world continue to intensify, you know, the prudent man hideth himself. The fool just keeps blundering out there and is punished for it. You see these things that are coming around. And I think part of prudence is preparation. We can see the direction that things are going in. And there's always this temptation to, when we're faced with, you know, an unpleasant reality, an unpleasant looming reality coming towards us, to just simply close our eyes and deny it and act like it won't affect us. You know, one of the greatest examples of this is the Red Terror, you know, the advancement of the Red Army towards the end of World War II. And you had the German army retreating, and all the one things hindering their retreat, they had all of these refugees that were fleeing with them. You know, make that square with the, you know, the Germans were the really evil ones narrative of our history. But nevertheless, they had all of these refugees, which slowed down their retreat, because they were having to take care of all these refugees who were fleeing with them. And they would go through these towns, and these refugees would warn the people in this town, you got to pack up whatever you can. You got to get out of the way. And they would tell them of the terror, the horror, the atrocities that were being committed on just regular people. It didn't have anything to do with it. It was just cruelty for cruelty's sake. The people in these towns, they don't have a say which army comes in and out, and yet they're brutalized. They themselves became the spoils of war. I'm sure all of you are pretty much familiar with it. And yet, you're also familiar with the fact that time and time again, a lot of these people would disregard the warnings and they would stay. They would start making excuses. And this is the temptation to deny reality and to just blunder forward. You know, the simple are punished because they don't see the evil coming. Well, you know, and they start making it just like with sin. You start making up justifications. Well, I'm just a regular guy. I'm just a farmer. I'll put a Soviet flag on my porch and give them some potatoes I've got back here, and they'll leave me alone. What's in it for them? In a way, it's understandable. That's a rational way to look at it. I mean, what are these advancing soldiers, what do they have to gain by brutalizing a family living on a farm that doesn't have anything to do with anything? And yet, history is clear. Oftentimes, you know, they would drag the women 8 to 80 from grandma to some small child and rape them, sometimes to death in the yard, and then brutalize and murder the men after forcing them to watch. It was quite a horrible thing and quite a terrible punishment for denying the reality. This is relevant because this spiritual battle we see in the world is continuing to get, shall we say, more out in the open and more hot. Things are coming. Bad times are obviously coming. And being prepared for that, not just physically, but spiritually, getting yourself ready. This is the time for discernment. We have to have discernment. We have to look at these things so that we're not caught up in them. It's not just a matter of, oh, you need to have some food prepared and gold and silver. All these people have these different ideas of what preparation means. You know, people that are preppers. I say, you got all of these people that are preppers and they're prepping and they're buying this food, and but they're not spiritually prepping. It's a spiritual battle. And if you're not spiritually prepping, you're in for a hard time. You'll get caught up. Get caught unawares. You got to be spiritually ready. It's fine to physically, whatever you think is the best course of action, to be ready for some of these hard times as far as the physical world that are going to come about. All that will be for naught if you don't spiritually prepare, if you don't look ahead. Now, a lot of these people see that these things are coming, that something is coming. We don't know specifically what, but we know something's coming. The Red Army is figuratively advancing, so as to speak. The spiritual Red Army. Things, there's, you look at the things that are happening to us, or happening rather around us in this world, and you may not know. We don't know. We don't have the ability to look into the future. A lot of people like to pretend they do, but we don't. But what you can do, and this is a part of discernment, is you look at the things going on around us and you ask yourself, what direction are they headed in? Do any of us think that it's okay in 5 years, everything's going to be great? In 10 years, all of this will be behind us. Everything will be functioning normally again. People will be behaving normally and rationally again. And everything will be back to normal. Our lives will go back to normal. We just got to get through this little rough patch, and then things will be normal. Do any of you think that? Because I don't think that. I look at the direction things are going, and they're only getting worse. They keep offering us these false hopes, you know. If we just get Trump in there, how many times have we heard that? We just got to get Trump in there. We get Trump in there. Then it's going to be, everything's going to be fixed. Everything is going to go back to normal. Well, we're the better part of 9 or so months into Trump's return. And are things better? Does it really feel like things are turning around? You have people trying to put stories out there to convince you that things are turning around. But are they? Because a lot of people see this turmoil, you know, they get hung up on certain things, and I think they miss the point. I see people get hung up on the mark of the beast, you know, and this comes up a lot because for instance, this digital ID they're pushing in Britain. Again, everything, you look at the direction things are going in. Were they, look, we all know, if they do not, if they fail to get this digital ID implemented in Britain, does anybody think that they're simply, it's simply going to go away? You know, if we can, if the British defeat and soundly reject digital ID and stop them from implementing it, then that's it. It's over. We'll never have to hear about that again. No, nobody believes that. Even if it's defeated, we know what'll happen. They'll repackage it, rebrand it, perhaps give us some more psyops or false flags or whatever narratives they need to try to convince people to do it again. And then they'll bring it back around. Might be 6 months, might be a year or two, but we know they'll bring it around because everything seems to keep going in this one direction. People, I see a lot of people bring up the mark of the beast, the mark of the beast. And I was thinking the other day of how people get hung up on the technicalities. You know, people seem obsessed about the technicalities of what the mark of the beast will look like. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that's all well and good, but it's kind of to miss the broader point. You know, people, one of the most popular views is they're going to, you know, implant a computer chip in your hand and you, that's how you'll buy everything. And you see the technology is here now. People, you don't even need a computer chip. That's kind of becoming passe. I saw a deal here a while back that in China, they got a thing where they can just, you just use your palm print. Who needs a computer chip? You put your palm print in front of the palm reader and bloop, you can pay for your stuff. All your records are on your, they have a palm scanner and they palm. Well, if that technology exists, who needs a computer chip? You don't even have to convince anybody to put a computer chip in their hand. It's never going to be the way you think. It's never going to be that obvious. But again, the technical aspects is kind of a distraction. It's kind of to miss the point. See, even like with the digital ID in and of itself isn't even the problem. The digital ID is a problem because we know the and then what? You get they implement digital ID, and then what? Well, then they will, you know, link your bank account to it, and they can just turn it off. So you get digital ID, and the next thing you're going to get the central bank digital currency, and then they can just punish you. They tell you how much you can have. They know every single thing you're doing. It'll be monitored. You see, it's the and then what? Now, the point I wanted to get to with this getting hung up on the technicalities of the mark of the beast, ultimately, it's about the demand. You know, because people talk about, oh, they'll get the digital currency and the digital ID, and then they're going to be able to punish you. They're going to be able to punish you. If you disagree with the government, they will punish you. And that's true. But again, it is to miss the point. What are you going to be punished for? Not so much for criticizing the government per se. The punishment is going to be, because bear down, because this is, again, why you have to recognize, I believe it's so imperative that we recognize this as a spiritual battle. You're going to be punished for not going along with the lie. The problems we have in our society, they're based in lies. You know, we have problems, and these politicians will act like, oh, we're working on it. We're going to form a committee. We're gonna form a committee to research and come up with some ideas. We're going to consult with some think tanks. And you sit there and you say, well, it looks like it's a pretty simple problem to solve. No. You see, it's very complicated. Well, it's only complicated because they're trying to maintain the structure of the lies. They create a lie and they won't abandon it. You are demanded to adhere to this lie. You have these stories. There's some stories here in Texas right now. Some of the school districts are in trouble because they're underperforming. Now, the government throws billions and billions of dollars into these school districts. And yet, time and again, the results are, shall we say, subpar. And so they form endless committees, do endless searches. The state will come in and take over these school districts to try to turn them around, because we've got to educate the children. We spend billions and billions of dollars. We throw billions and billions of dollars at the education system. And the results are subpar. They'll form countless committees, spend money on research, and at the end of the day, the only ever answer they ever come up with is, we need to spend more money. Give the teachers a raise. Just throw some more billions at education. But the results don't change. Now, the lie at the center of this is the fact that race is a social construct and that it doesn't exist beyond skin color. And so if you're having subpar results, particularly in one or another racial group, then it has to be a failure in the system itself, not just a result of the racial demographics. They always talk about, oh, we have all these problems with these school districts. And most of the time, if you look at the racial demographics of the school district, you know, the why is pretty obvious and a glaring truth. And yet all of these experts, all these government officials can't acknowledge that, because that would be then to deny the lie that we are all supposed to adhere to. There's no difference between people. And I'm not insulting anybody here. I'm trying to be careful not to do that, not because I care about being politically correct, but because it would miss the point. There are racial differences. If you put me in a Asian-dominated STEM class, I would be a moron in there. You know, I mean, not that I think of myself as stupid, but if you put me in a class full of, you know, really good Asians in this field, and I had to partake in this class, I would be the dumbest person in there. It is. It is what it is. Some people are better at certain things than others. And when you look at this and then you go, oh my gosh, these school districts, and predominantly those school districts will be predominantly black. And again, I'm not insulting anybody, because I don't want you to miss the point. Instead of just simply acknowledging, well, you know, these people aren't going to do real well in the courses we're teaching them. You know, maybe we should focus on basic things and then finding a productive avenue that they can channel their energies. Instead, we're trying to turn everybody into rocket scientists. You know, we're trying to turn everybody into, you know, super intelligence, because again, the lie that must be adhered to is race is a social construct. Everybody's exactly the same. It's just skin color is the only thing. And so if you're not turning, you know, all the little Treveriuses from the Section 8 housing into rocket scientists, then we need to throw some more money at the system. And it's cost billions and billions of dollars, instead of saying, well, there is a difference. You know, there is a difference in people. Maybe we should more efficiently channel our money and get better results. But see, you cannot abandon the lie. And this is what it comes down to. And this is the point, I think, that gets missed with Mark of the Beast. And when people start talking about Mark of the Beast and all of, oh, they're going to put a computer chip or a tattoo. They're going to put a tattoo. If they have the technology, just simply scan your palm. They don't need any of those things. Which makes sense, because a lot of people wouldn't do it, because everybody, the Mark of the Beast. But if you're just scanning your palm, what then? Is your palm the Mark of the Beast? That what you're born with? They don't need to scan a computer chip. They can just use your face. They can just use the palm of your hand that you already have. They don't have to give you a tattoo or a computer chip. It's about submitting to the lie. We know what the lies are. And if you don't go along with them, here comes the punishment. The submission to the lie is the heart of the mark. That's what I believe. And yes, there's going to be a technical aspect to it. But I think it's kind of to miss the point to get hung up on the technical aspect of it. How are they going to implement it? Don't worry about that. What you need to be worried about is why they're implementing it. You will go along with the lie. those who submit, when they talk about, when it's written about those who, you know, have the mark, those who worship the beast, the worshiping is the submitting to the lie. Have you noticed how, and I know you have, it's a rhetorical question. Have you noticed how dumb the lies have gotten over the years? I mean, they've just gotten just laughably stupid. That's by design. It has to be obviously stupid. That way it takes more submission to go along with it. And I believe this in and of itself is the essence of the quote-unquote mark, the submission to the lie. And when you know it's a lie, because if somebody just tricks you, you don't know any better, what are you really guilty of? But if it's a stupid in-your-face lie, and because you don't want to be punished, and you don't want to be socially ostracized, you don't want to get called all of these names, so you just shut up and go along and pretend like, yeah, you believe that too, when you know it's a lie. See, this is a form of worship. You know it's bullshit, and you bow down and you go along to get along. I read where people are commenting on the internet, and you have a lot of people, and they say, "I ain't going along with it. Not me. When they bring out that mark of the beast, I'm not taking the mark. I'm not going to go along with it." But yet we've had trial runs. COVID was a big one, and really, when you reflect back on that, at the overall, it was a pretty successful run. I mean, it was. A lot of people now that were really just into it, you know, into the COVID. They were into the COVID. And they were the ones screeching at people in the grocery store, "You're standing closer than 6 feet away from me." Now, several years ago, by the same people trying to act like, "Oh, I didn't do any of that. Yeah, we ain't falling for that." And you're like, "What you talking about? I seen you driving around with a mask in your car by yourself 5 years ago." Overall, if you look at the results of the COVID thing, I think most people will. I think they will go along when push comes to shove. And then you have those that loved it. You still see them. Now you still see some of them walking around with a mask on, like they want it to come back. They want another quote-unquote pandemic. They're ready. They still got their mask ready. Hopefully it's not the same nasty disposable mask from 4 or 5 years ago. The prudent man sees these things coming. We don't have to know the details, but we know it's coming. We know these various things are coming, and we prepare. Not just physically, but spiritually, because it is a spiritual battle. If you understand... Because again, it's a temptation to deny reality. And if you're not preparing spiritually, when that time comes around and you can go along with the lie, like everybody else around you is doing, and you're looking around, you know half these people don't believe it either, but they're going along. Because if you don't, what? Then you will be punished. If you don't go along with the lie, which is obvious and stupid, then you'll be punished. And if you're not spiritually prepared for that, you'll fall into a temptation of, well, yeah, I'll just go along to get along. I don't want to lose any comfort I have left in my life. So I'll just go ahead and submit. I'll just go ahead. I got bills to pay. I just go ahead. They'll shut off my digital currency connected to my digital ID or whatever. And so I'll just go along and nod in agreement with whatever obvious and stupid lie that they did, because it doesn't matter. Yeah, I know it's bullshit. Everybody knows it's bullshit. We'll just play along with it. And that's submission. And that gets to the heart of it. It's not about what kind of technical way they implement this. It is bowing down to the lie. It is submitting to the lie. Because once you do that, you'll go along with anything, whatever the technical aspect of it is. Once you justify denying reality, once you justify that in your mind, then you can justify anything. You'll go along with anything. Once you go along with this, then you'll go along with this, and you'll go along with this even more absurd lie that they demand. And it will. It will give the lies, as we've already seen, that it's demanded we go along with, will inevitably become more and more stupid and more absurd. That's by design. Because that way you can't deny it. You can't say, "Well, I didn't know." The devil, remember, the devil always gives you a choice. This is how you know the difference. I've said this before. This is how you know the difference between just things that are from the evil hearts of men and things that are actually of Satan. Satan will always give you a choice. He'll make it as tough as possible. He'll try to trick you. He'll try to deceive you. But at the end of the day, you have to have a choice, because otherwise you can't stand condemned. You can't stand accused before God. You have to have that choice. And if it's a really absurd and stupid lie that you go along with, all the more easier to accuse you. Then how can you sit to try to justify and say, oh, well, I didn't know, when it's so obvious and stupid? So the next time you hear somebody go on and on about Mark of the Beast, man, I tell you, the Mark of the Beast, and they're going to implement this, and they're going to do this, and this is definitely a part of the Mark of the Beast, and I don't get so caught up in that, and remember what the central goal of it is. And the goal will be to go along with the lie, because that is the form of worship, to go along with the lie, not whether they use a computer chip or the palm of your hand, your existing palm print or a digital ID. I mean, those things, again, those things may be part of it. And I'm not saying you can go along with it, because if you go along with it, you're inevitably going to go along with the lie. You know, it's a step by step. They walk you into it. You know, they lure you in. They got to get you in the van first. While you're still out on the street, you got a chance of running away and escaping. They got to lure you closer and get you in the van. Same thing, step by step. That's okay. Just go ahead and get the digital ID. Just go ahead. This will be more convenient. This will keep you safe. That's what they really love. This will keep you safe. We're going to just get you in the van. So to keep you safe, it's scary out there. There's no telling who could be out there. But if you're in the van with us, you'll be a lot safer. You're going to get you closer and closer. And then once they got you in there, then you're in. A prudent man sees these things. We see where these things are headed, and you start preparing yourself. You hideth yourself. You're preparing. The fool just blunders forward and gets punished. The fool blunders forward, just says, no, everything's going to be fine. And they're completely unprepared. And when it comes upon them, they'll just get swept up in it. But at the end of the day, you will have a choice. And you will stand accountable for those choices. We're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of today's show, especially the Christian-specific segment, of course. I appreciate you joining today. Dr. Johnson should be here tomorrow with his Orthodox Nationalist. And as always, he wraps our week up on Thursdays with his installment of the Daily Nationalist. I hope you'll get a chance to check out all our content here on Radio Albion. Hope you enjoy the rest of the week. And as always, I hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.